WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into March and March Madness and the sadness that comes after the elation of beating West Virginia up there at the Barstool Sports Restaurant and Hollywood Casino up in Perryville. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. As promised, I have dates. It's real. I'm wearing the Costas shirt because Costas is one of the original purveyors of all things Maryland Lottery from 1973. They've been there since 71, just like the shirt says. And on the 5th of April, we are going to begin the spring edition of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Get those windows. If you haven't gotten them yet, do what I did. And we're going to start the Crab Cake Tour at Costas. We're going to be at Fadley's on the 7th to open CFG Bank Arena with Bruce Springsteen and the Eagles. I had to go up to State College and do a little business research on the Springsteen show for the April 7th show. We're going to be at Fadley's that day doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, bringing friends together. We're going to be kicking it off. Opening day is the 6th. So 5th at Costas, 6th is opening day. I'm not doing anything official that day, but a lot of unofficial things. And then on the 7th, we'll be at Fadley's. It's all part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and the spring kickoff. We're also getting the Pappas up in Bel Air in April for everybody north of the border up in Harford County as well. And the Maryland Lottery has asked me to hold up the 50th anniversary gold scratch-off tickets, too. This is just a sample. It's not a real one. Luke Jones joins us now. I had a friend, Luke, in middle school. He's still a friend of mine. I shouldn't say had a friend. He's still a friend. His name's Brian Poole. And so it's Poole with an E. And Brian was traveling over the weekend. I see him out on Facebook. And we had bracket pools back in middle school. And I was always the guy that handled the dollar bills. I admitted this to Dennis last week. I admitted this to John Martin that, you know, I was involved in early March Madness bracketeering in 1980, 81, 82, Kiki Vandeweghe, Joe Barry Carroll. You can go back to this stuff. So if you want to go back 34 years, but the early bracketology is that we started joking early on. My friend's name is Brian Poole, and I hope he hears this segment. If you know him, throw him a note that we used to say, my pool is a puddle. Day one, day two, it is no longer a pool. It is dried up. And if you had Maryland beating Alabama, I guess yours is dried up. But, hey, dude, if you didn't have Princeton or if you didn't love Fairleigh Dickinson, perhaps over the weekend. But a fun, fun weekend of March Madness. And, Luke, I'll even say this, that even in the Aparicio household, as late as Sunday, after a long night in State College of me and Ross Tucker eating Peachy Paterno up there at State College, that my wife wanted to watch basketball all day Sunday. So we did hang out. We did March Madness. We did the great American thing, and we bracketed, and I drank beer. I had wings. I did it all, man. And you had to get it all in because Maryland wasn't going to last too long Saturday night.
Yeah, and not exactly a big shock. I mean, you and I talked about this a week ago, and we were saying at the time, first of all, the fact that Kevin Willard gets these Terps to the NCAA tournament in year one, knowing what the expectations were, knowing that the roster was some holdovers from Mark Turgeon and some transfers, portal, that whole thing. I mean, that's becoming more prevalent across the landscape of college basketball, but certainly for a first-year head coach in a new setting. So I wrote it, I tweeted it at WNST on our Twitter page that from the time they beat West Virginia, I mean, everything was gravy from that point. You know, the idea that if you had told a Terps fan back in early November that you could sign up for an NCAA tournament appearance and a first-round win, I think most people would be doing cartwheels. And I think that's the overall sense. You know, Saturday night, late Saturday night disappointment aside, which, I mean, it just came down to this. The Terps just didn't make shots. What, they went 4 of 4, made their first four shots, and then went 15 of 50 from the field after that. I mean, you shoot 30% for most of the game against the top team in the tournament, a number one seed. You're not going to move on. And probably could have been a little uglier than it was, if not for the fact that, you know, I thought for large stretches of that game, Maryland defended pretty well. So, you know, I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, you're talking about a team that was an 8 seed. So, yeah, you're going to run into the number one seed most of the time, unless you're thinking you're going to play Purdue in the second round, as we found out and solved just what was a phenomenal upset that I think Even some people like me who said, watch out for Purdue losing in the second round, and we gave them too much credit, apparently. But it was outstanding. But overall, to the point that you made, especially the first round, I mean, the second round was good as well. But that first round of games, both Thursday and Friday, the mix of upsets, buzzer beaters or near buzzer beaters, lots of drama late in games. That was as good of a first round as I can remember in quite some time. I mean, it was outstanding.
New
And
Jersey liked it.
oh yeah, no question about it. When you look at that's what was funny, seeing so many of these teams, these upsets. It's a good tournament, and you see a team win, and then it's like, where are they from? You have to ask that
My
question with some of
wife
these
was wondering
teams.
about St. Mary's. She's like, well, that's not the St. Mary's in St. Mary's County that we went down to. I'm like, no, that's not that one. Who are these guys? And where did they come from? Yeah, Luke, I would just say this on the Terps. And I went out. I sat at the bar stool up in Perryville, and there were Terps fans there, but it wasn't maniacal. And I guess there's environment for that in College Park and whatnot. And look, man, I go back to them winning a national championship and sort of no one showing up for a parade. So I that was 20 years ago. So I have tempered how de deep the depth of the enthusiasm for Terps basketball or Terps football or Terps lacrosse or any of these sort of niche things that Terps fans would be involved in. Now, that being said, this is a building block for whatever the next thing is, which is they couldn't get people to go down to the gym for years. Turgeon had this, whatever the love-hate thing about him was, and that's over with now. This guy has clearly stepped into good terms and has won over, should have won over everybody at this point. The how does he recruit thing? I mean, this whole NIL for every coach out there, it's the Wild Wild West. I don't know how good any of these guys are at being bagmen for money. I mean, which is pretty much what this is at this point, right? So for all of that, we'll figure all that out. Meanwhile, I'm going to be having a little free plug here for the Connect X folks around here in Hunt Valley. Gary Williams is going to be up on Wednesday. I'm going to spend the day with Gary, hear what's on his mind about basketball in the modern day and all the things I'm thinking as I'm watching these young student athletes, male and female. I mean, we watched some of the women's tournament as well. We were into that Fairleigh Dickinson game from 12 minutes left. I'm like, there's a chance, put it on, who knows? And wound up getting sort of brought into the tournament a little bit. The 5'7" point guard that we're like, let's root for that guy, So there's a little bit of that that goes on for all of this. But then there's, okay, what have the Terps built here? What's the residue for my pal Jack Crabby and our friends over at the Fan? I actually had to leave Barstool a little early and I listened to the Terps game. I had no idea Johnny Holiday was ailing, so I want to give him some love while I'm in the middle of this segment, because Johnny's one of the really special people in my life over 31 years of my career. I didn't realize, I saw on Facebook, but Chris Knocke did a great job of calling the game on the Fan. I'm going to get Chris on at some point. We're going to talk some basketball here. But the thing for me in the season that I take out of it as a guy that watched McMillan and Elmore and David Thompson at his head on the backboard 50 years ago now, right? Like literally, I would say they had some memories and some magic that if your 18-year-old kid went to Maryland this year and was up there and you suck and you got to come back and they had wins, they had big home wins and they had a tournament win, that I would say if I'm your niece or if I'm a 12-year-old kid or a Joe Enoch's kids that are teenagers, that if this is where it starts for you, if this is where you're Walt Williams, you're Len Elmore, you're Adrian Branch or Greg Manning or wherever Buck Williams, wherever your guy is, Joe Smith, who I saw was signing some autographs recently with my buddy Walt Williams. So all of these people that come in this, somebody said Kevin McClinton to me the other day. I was sitting at the bar stool just making talk with a guy and no idea who I was. We're just watching the game, BSing for two. It was great. And he was like giving me old Terps memories, like, I used to get out of call. And I'm like, let's talk about this because I don't get to talk about this much because we didn't talk about this much during Turgeon. So this is sort of poking it that maybe you and I will get in the car and go see Northwestern next year, that we would want to be a part of it. And I think the memories that were made on the nights when they played well early in the year, when they flashed at a couple of big wins and you're watching on television, and then the Big Ten happens and all they do is just beat down teams on the home court, and it's a big party, and everybody leaves feeling good. And I've driven that road back after getting your ass kicked from Duke. It's a long road. It's a lot colder on the 9 o'clock game when Gary's pissed off throwing stuff and you're driving home at 1 o'clock in the morning. I've been that guy. So I think being happy after wins and having moments, that's what I think the Terps 22-23 season is. Was it a jumping, like a complete white wall, right? A complete brand new canvas for whatever the next thing's going to be. It's not about Gary and Juan Dixon. God knows it's not about that after last week and our Coppin friends here. But, like, I think it's something new. And I think that that part of it for me is, yeah, okay, I'll accept it. I like it.
Yeah, I think it gives you a chance to have some hope again. Let's face it. What Kevin Willard and the Terps did this year was, except for one season under Mark Turgeon, was their ceiling, right? I mean, Mark Turgeon got to one Sweet 16. We've talked about it. That's the Diamond Stone, Rasheed Suleiman, you know, that kind of that hired gun feel kind of a team that they had. But that was the ceiling.
The rented underachieving team.
Yeah. And look, let's be clear. I mean, Kevin Willard winning a game in the NCAA tournament and getting to the round of 32, you know, that's not the end goal. That's not the end game here, but it's a great jumping off point, as you mentioned. And you know, I keep coming back to, and I was even talking about this with a couple of my buddies, you know, going back to, you know, guys who have rooted for the Terps most of their lives. And yeah, there was this overall debate, and you and I talked about this a lot the last 3 or 4 years. You know, not that we talked a ton about the Terps, but when we would talk about Mark Turgeon and how split the opinions were. And there was such a strong sentiment among some, and it's not one that I subscribe to, it's one I push back on a lot, quite frankly. But the thought was Mark Turgeon was doing as well as Maryland fans should expect to do. And I really pushed back on that idea of, wait a second, look, I am not saying that Maryland under Kevin Willard or anyone who could come in here right now is guaranteed or has some kind of birthright to be a perennial Final Four team. Let's be honest about what it was under Gary Williams. I mean, Gary built and there were Sweet 16s and there was kind of that ceiling that was thought, okay, can they get past the Sweet 16? And there were thoughts in the late 90s wondering if Gary Williams could get a Terps team past that threshold. And then Juan Dixon and Lonnie Baxter come around and Chris Wilcox.
Hey,
and,
man, for Terps fans, the expectations got so low. Just win the tournament. Just lay out down in Greensboro for a weekend. We'll lose in the 16 or the 32. We'll be okay. That I don't know that I ever really believed they could win the national champion. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I was, they were always the third best team in their own conference. And Gary was always fighting to be number two, like, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And there was always a Wake Forest. There was always a Florida State. There was, like, in that era, it was just, it was never like Maryland was the cream of the ACC crop ever. They always came in as something's wrong with them, you know, that there'd be a greater reason to go play for Dean Smith or Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the point is they got to that, they broke that threshold and they went to a Final Four and then they won a national championship the following year. So the idea that Terps fans shouldn't have hope and visions of being able to do that again at some point, again, not every year, but at some point, you know, you get the right recruiting class a couple years back to back and, you know, you catch lightning in a bottle and you've got a special group of kids and the schedule falls the right way and you get the right draw in the NCAA tournament. Why can't that happen again? Why can't you get back to a Final Four again at some point in time? So that's where I think when Kevin Willard came in last spring, and look, I'm not saying that winning the press conference is that important at the end of the day. I think it's oftentimes very overrated and, you know, everyone's going to state their vision and talk about having this great success, but you know, it was a very different tone that he had compared to what we had heard from Mark Turgeon. And look, I don't want to beat up on Mark Turgeon too much here, but there always felt like there was a sense of self-satisfaction that what we've done is pretty good and it should be good enough. And, you know, I never bought that. And people who fed into that, I pushed back on that. And I'm saying this much more as a fan. I mean, I haven't covered Terps basketball regularly in a number of years, but just watching it, just saying, why can't it be better than this? So for Kevin Willard to do that in year one, acknowledging there's a lot of work to do. And I think you look across the Big Ten, with Michigan State being the exception as far as getting to the round of 16, you know, there's even that talk of the Big Ten and the style of play. in this conference, how does it translate to playing in the NCAA tournament? I you
Well,
know,
when
it's
Fairleigh
much more
Dickinson was
physical,
running
more
around
plodding.
Purdue, as you predicted a week ago, I think we
Yeah.
learned, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't think Fairleigh Dickinson, but whichever team it was going to be, and I thought, like I said, I thought it would be more of a second round, you know, one of those second round teams that Purdue would play that
Somebody's going to dribble
potentially
and
would.
shoot and give them a hard time,
But
period, right?
you just look at the athleticism and the speed that you see elsewhere, and that's what I think is going to be the challenge for Kevin Willard, finding that sweet spot of yes, you want to win your conference, right? But also in a big picture sense, it's not just about winning the Big Ten tournament or just about winning the Big Ten regular season. You want to be able to compete in March. And let's face it, Tom Izzo and Michigan State being the exception, and even them until recently, they had a little bit of a mini swoon in terms of their March Madness tournament success, you know, until recently here. There's been that sense of, okay, the Big Ten, well, you know, you get seven or eight or nine teams in, but how many are getting past the first weekend? This year's a great example of that. So I think for Maryland, you know, the big key for Kevin Willard is just going to be continuing to build, right? This was not the culmination. This was the beginning. And, you know, you look at the recruiting class coming in next year, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but, you know, Deshaun Harris-Smith, four-star recruit out of Fairfax, and, you know, a good, you know, really good shooting guard prospect. You know, some others that are coming in. You know, it's a pretty well-regarded class. You know, you got to be able to do that every year, right? You have to be able to recruit, as you
Well, you're going to
mentioned.
lose two or three of those kids because
Well,
they're
and
going
that's
to,
the right.
there's going to be a churn and burn
No
here.
doubt. No doubt. And that's going to be everywhere, right? I mean, we're seeing the transfer portal just become such a big part of the landscape. And look, the big time programs, they can get someone to transfer in too. You know, you have to be able to do both, right? You're going to
Oh, you're
recruit.
going to be
Everyone's
stealing kids
figuring
from
out,
Texas, no doubt.
no doubt. And everyone's figuring out the NIL thing. And I'm not going to sit here and try to say that I have some great understanding of how it's going to work. I think it's evolving as we speak, and I think you're even seeing big programs still figuring that out, and we're even seeing smaller programs do some things probably creatively that's helping their cause. So, you know, it all comes together, and I think if you're Kevin Willard, again, you're encouraged by what happened this year. Let's face it, this was not a great Maryland team by any stretch of the imagination. But I want to go back to something that you said that I think is a great point, and I think really heartens me for the future is how well they played at home. And you said it, the memories they created, whether it was beating Purdue, of course, or Northwestern,
I just had
just
so many friends who took their kids down
they had a
there
great
this
time.
year and left with a winner. Same as me and my dad in 1979 getting on the bus after Orioles games. We went home winners. I don't know that I would have felt that way about the Cleveland Indians when I was 11 in 1979 if I lost every night, right? Like, so there is a part of luring. Hey, the Orioles are about to do this too, right? Winning's more fun than losing. And this whole Lamar thing, like all of that that's going into this is. If you're not winning, nobody's coming. And like Maryland football will tell you that, Maryland basketball, the Orioles will tell you that. Like the Ravens are about to figure that out if things go see. I love all the sign Lamar sign. Okay, great. Like then they still got to go win, but that's neither here nor there. But with the Terps and their space in all of this, now that it's over, and Terps lacrosse season's always great. Posner loves
Sure.
it. Monday mornings, we talk a lot of Terps lacrosse around here, and they have a great pedigree for that. And I've been hearing for 31 years on the radio, lacrosse will get there. It'll get okay, but it's never going to fill up the football stadium. Same thing with soccer to some degree locally. But for the Terps basketball, that's their big thing. It's never going to be football to have at least shined and flashed. And given some of these memories, there is a thing about a kid wanting that bias poster on his wall when he's 55 still, right? That you want people buying into the brand. And I thought for years, how are they ever going to reinvigorate it? And I feel that way about the Orioles to some degree, but it is amazing. A couple of Gunnar Henderson's and a couple of Adley Rutschman's and all of a sudden 35,000 people are at the ballpark on a June night and people get into it. The Terps have a little flow going right now. And I want to figure out where that's going. And part of that is give me some recruiting news. Give me some, make me sit up in June and say, talk Terps basketball that I don't go to sleep and I hear about it again in October, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's a challenge to that. I mean, let's face it, we've talked about this a lot. Short of the NFL, which, my goodness, You'll turn on ESPN this week and look at everything that's going on. You've got the NCAA tournament, Sweet 16 this week. You've got the World Baseball Classic, which has been, we'll get into that when we talk baseball, but it's been really fun and engaging, and injury, controversy and debate aside, that's going on. And, as you mentioned, lacrosse, you got the NBA regular season winding down, same thing with NHL, but they'll talk NFL, right? I mean, that's the one sport that gets oxygen year round. But if you're Maryland, no, not people aren't going to be talking Terps basketball every week between now and November, but there's definitely some enthusiasm for it. And what you mentioned is something that Buck Showalter, when he was manager of the Orioles, would say all the time. And I really think back to 2011, 2010, 2011, those first couple of years, even 2012, the first time they made it where no one really believed until you look up and they had 93 wins at the end of the season and said, okay, well, they're a wild card. But he would talk about this every time there would be, and typically it would be attached to a giveaway. There would be a bobblehead, something, Hawaiian shirt night, whatever it would be, and
This
they'd
is
have
the
a big.
Buck who ran the Arizona Diamondbacks and picked the color scheme. So I just will point that. And he liked his guys that year. But keep going.
But he would talk about this when they would have a big crowd, right? And we've talked so much about attendance for a long time as it pertains to the Orioles. But really, again, other than the NFL, and even in certain NFL markets, it's more challenging. We've talked about it with the Ravens. They're having to try harder to sell tickets at a time when they never had to do that in the past. But the point he always made, and it would come after a win. They'd have a big crowd, and then they'd win. He'd say, "This was a good night for the Orioles because there were people out there who said, we want to come back." And that's the idea. And that's where, when you go 10-0 in Big Ten play on your home floor in College Park, there is more value probably to that than making it to the NCAA tournament and beating West Virginia, right? There's probably more value to, I mean, think about all those games. How many potential recruits or even kids that are in middle school right now or ninth grade, and they're saying, hey, College Park, that's an electric atmosphere. I mean,
Luke, let
that's.
me say this. I sat on the bar stool, like literally at the bar where I sat in the same seat every time I've been to Barstool Sports Restaurant up in Perryville at the Hollywood Casino. And the guy sitting had no idea. We were just two guys watching the game. And it was 2 hours into it. And we were talking old stories about going down to College Park. He said, I was down there, saw McClinton play. And he was giving me the Duke guys. I don't remember what. It was, I said Allery and Billis. This was a little 91, 92, a little later. But he had his memories. And 33 years later, he's taken half a day off of work. It's lunchtime. He's got a beer and some. And he's talking about the fun he had. And he's sort of my age, maybe a little younger than me. I think he was based on his memories. Because we're all of our music, if you're in the Linkin Park and Foo Fighters, you're younger than me, right? So it's the same thing with sports. So I'm sitting talking to the guy for a couple of hours, and here we are, two big kids all these years later. And all I could think about is being in Ocean City this summer, or being in Nags Head, or where you go up in Wildwood or Rehoboth, or where Atlantic City, wherever you are, and you got your Terps hat on, or you're in the airport, you get your Terps hat on, and the kid or whatever that kid is, 17, 14, 12, 8, male, female, whatever. They went to a game. They watched the game. They had a wing. They were up late with dad, mom watching the game. And they want to go, or they went and had a great time. And they'll say, I want to go back again, or I can't wait for the Purdue game next year, or whatever that game is. That's the thing that I think the Terps season did that. Dude, I've been knowing you a long time. I don't think we've ever had this conversation about the reinvigor, not even with all the Under Armour money. I mean, we've had awful deaths on campus down there. We've had football coaches come in and out, right? We've had all sorts of things, not a lot of bowl game, none of that, right? Lacrosse championships and a lot of disappointments in Final Fours. But I don't think we've talked about the basketball program having any seed of anything other than this circling drain of Mark Turgeon and I did like the Turgeonites, by the way. I thought that's a shtick I miss a little bit,
That was
but
good.
it was
It was
good. It was
good.
really good. But I would just say for having that thing at the beach in the off season and wearing the hat, and it's been 22 years since they won a 21 years since they won a championship, right? 20, 21, 22, whatever it is. But either way, this is the next generation, and kudos to giving a memory even on Thursday with me starting the tournament off that they won a game and it was exciting.
No question. I mean, it's we all think back to that. I mean, I had to think. I even talked about this with a couple friends that, the Terps being the first game of the tournament. Of course, they tipped off 12:15 on Thursday. I thought back to being a kid and a few years where the NCAA tournament was starting. It's funny. I'd wake up that morning and not feel great, and I'd say, "Mom, I don't think I can go to school today." I tell you, that
Don't
happened a few
scratch.
years where, I sit home and I'll watch the tournament. Hey, I was a good student, so it was a mental health day. How about that? But no, like just that magic of, you fill out the bracket, and that happens every year, right? I mean, and certainly, the gambling element of it becoming even stronger is part of that. But when
Well,
it's
I'm
your
sitting in
own
a
team.
casino watching the game, right? So I'm thinking, how much have times changed here?
No
You know,
doubt.
I used to have to go to Vegas to do that. Now I go to Hollywood Casino, and I want to give a plug to them because this is kind of a funny thing. Because you're like, it's 12:15 game. I'm sitting in there. I got a beer. I got a salmon salad. It was delicious. And they have like it. You feel like you're in Vegas, right? It's TVs everywhere. It's beautiful. It's modern, brand new. It used to be the Green Turtle. Now it's the Barstool Sports. And the Terps are on, and the Terps are on, and the Terps are on. And I'm watching this one television, but it's on every television. And then, like an hour into the game, half the televisions go to another game. I'm like, oh yeah, I had to like move. I literally had to move my body to a different place to watch a different television because I'm like, God, there's like 67 other games going on here today. But I mean, at least that first hour, it was like all Terps, and I thought that that was kind of a unique memory for me because you usually fly in and you're. As I would say to my friend Brian Poole, my bracket's already a puddle, usually by the time the Terps play, you know. But they had it, and I was 1-0 with the Terps on my bracket.
You're 1-0 and probably 1-1 right after that when Furman beat Virginia, moments later, which talk about, Terps fans. I mean, you see, and look, old ACC rivalries die hard, right? So to see Virginia get knocked off just moments later, that was
Dude, I
great.
sat
That
in
was
a
great.
bar in State College watching it snow with my buddy Craig Lusco. We had one beer and Duke was about to get eliminated. And I said to him, we're not leaving. I said,
Of
when Duke
course.
gets eliminated, you remember where I said to him, you remember where you are when Duke gets eliminated every year. And like, we're out of the ACC a decade and a half, man. Like, I can't let it go, Luke, you know?
Yeah, and nor should you. I mean, it's part of Maryland's history, right? And to be clear, this isn't even lamenting leaving the ACC, because the ACC is not the same as it used to be when you look at some of the teams and rivalries and whatnot. But I think, the overall point I was making about filling out a bracket and the gambling element and the bracket pools and all that stuff, which, everyone does. It's fun. Even people who don't follow college basketball do it. It's why that NCAA tournament is such a fantastic event. You can just dive right in and you look at the numbers, right? You see the seeds and you know who you're rooting for right away, depending on your bracket, or if you just want to root for the underdog. It's fun. You don't have to be invested in the entire season to enjoy it. So I think that's why it's such a successful event. But it does hit differently when your team is involved and your team has a chance. And that's why I think even for Kevin Willard and the Terps, I'll be bowing out against a really tough Alabama team, which was not unexpected. They watch the rest of this now and say, okay, what do we need to do to get better? What do we need to do to get better within the Big Ten? And also, what do we need to do to make a deep March run? And I think going back to a point I made a few minutes ago, talking about the Big Ten in general, there are questions about the speed and athleticism and guard play. I talked about this with Purdue. Edie's phenomenal player, right? Probably going to be National Player of the Year. Was certainly Big Ten Player of the Year, but the question was with Purdue, and this applies to lots of teams in the conference. Is the guard play good enough? Is there enough speed? Is there enough athleticism? And that's where you look at some of these Big Ten teams, and you think of the plodding, more physical style of play. How does that translate? And I think that's where you look at this thing over the last 10 to 15 years. Michigan State has been king of the conference, and kudos to Tom Izzo, and we understand that. But you do look at the Big Ten, get all these teams in, and only one gets out of the first weekend. If you're Kevin Willard, you're saying, hey, there's a path here to, being right there with Michigan State. And we talked about this a decade ago when the Terps were entering the Big Ten, right? I mean, with Mark Turgeon and all of that. So, the next challenge is, can you recruit? And we'll see what this roster looks like. I mean, Julian Reese improved immensely down the stretch, foul trouble aside. in a couple games, but he really played well. What's going to happen with Jameer Young? You know, does he come back? I mean, he's certainly not a guy who's going to be drafted into the NBA. You know, that just as an aside, since I bring him up, the one disappointing element of this was how much Jameer Young struggled in the postseason. And not even bashing the kid because he was so important to them. Just disappointed for him more than anything that he did struggle in the Big Ten tournament and didn't see him playing his best basketball at the end of the year. Did he
He
wear
could have hit
down?
five more of those shots and they still would have lost by 10.
Yeah, I mean,
You
that's
know, like so.
and again, the Alabama game, yeah, they started out hot, and I was watching the end, Penn State. I was watching the end of that game. Penn State had a nice run, a big win for them in the first round. You know, Penn State was trying to pull off an upset, but you know, so I
Everybody in
was
the arena
following
was
both
watching
games.
that and
Maryland,
wrestling and Bruce Springsteen at State College. Like, it's a crazy night in State College on Saturday
I
night.
bet, I
It really
bet,
was.
no question. But Maryland, I mean, they didn't make shots. Their offense wasn't good enough, and we talked about that. I mean, this was clearly a team that defense, you know, kind of drove the car for them. So what happens next in terms of recruits and what the roster looks like? How do you use the transfer portal? Certainly need some more big man depth. I think that's evident. You love what Julian Reese did, but after, you know, beyond him, you need more. And, you know, it's just gonna be a matter of how does Kevin Willard build? You know, that again, Mark Turgeon had the idea that what the Terps accomplished this year was good enough, right? I mean, that was kind of his thought. So Kevin Willard, I don't get the sense that there's going to be that mindset. I think he's very pleased with what this team did this year in year one, but I think he understands expectations are going to be higher. His expectations are higher. So just a matter of how are you going to go about doing that? Because it is easier said than done.
That means they go 10-0 at home next year.
How about win a few games on the road in the Big Ten? That would be a nice, that would be some nice progress. Definitely have to work on that. There's no question.
Well, watch out for Michigan State in the East this weekend in the bracket because they could still get through this thing. And that's kind of one of the things I would just say in closing on it with Maryland is, you know, even in years where you were sixth seed or whatever with Gary, you felt like to some degree, hey, maybe they can punch here a little
Maybe.
bit because they beat Duke at home back in February or, you know, whatever that thing would be. Michigan State, just on the branding of it, shows up and you know, Kansas State should be worried. They should all be worried. He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. He's going to be doing Ravens, Lamar, still sending out WNST text courtesy of our friends at Coons Baltimore Ford. Dennis will be here on Thursday as well. He's been out doing some fishing, so good for him. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the 5th of April at Costas. I'm wearing my Costas gear. And don't forget the 50th anniversary scratch-offs. I'll have these to give away, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 24-month 0% financing. We might have some new sponsors coming into the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Also, Classic Five on with us now, and our friends at Hollywood Casino and Barstool Sports. So new sponsors, great things going on. The 5th, we're at Costas. The 7th, we're going to be at Fadley's. We're going to be at Pappas, another new sponsor up in Bel Air. And that's going to be in later April, too. So great stuff happening here. March Madness happening. And opening day right around the corner. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.